This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. Remember this old jingle from the 80s?
Wow, new chocolate chip cookie!
Crispy, chewy, crispy, chewy.
Well, it was a Duncan Hines commercial where they talked about crispy, chewy, tastes like my mom's does. Only that's not so much like we have today. We like to make our cookies handmade here. You know that what those kids are talking about? That magical home-baked quality of chocolate chip cookies, crispy, buttery edges, the soft, molten, chewy center. I'm getting hungry just talking about it. The problem is, how do you keep them like that on a shelf for a couple of weeks? Right? You're a cookie maker, you got to keep them on the shelf fresh and chewy like that. Well, that cookie science secret was at the heart, actually, of a huge patent war in the 1980s. Procter & Gamble, the producer of Duncan Hines cookies, accused Keebler, Frito-Lay, and Nabisco of stealing their secret for crispy, chewy cookies. And they got a settlement of $125 million in return. That was reported to be the largest payment ever for a patent lawsuit at the time it was settled in 1989. Well, today, as holiday cookie season kicks into full gear, we're going to reveal that secret. Uh-oh. With a special Sci-Fry recipe, our food failure series continues with this special holiday edition with my guest, Jeff Potter. He's a software engineer, but he's also author of Cooking for Geeks, Real Science, Great Hacks, and Good Food. And it's now a kitchen classic. He joins us in our New York studios with a whole bunch of cookies here. Welcome, Jeff.
Thanks for having me.
Wow. What kinds of cookies are we looking? What do we have in front of me here?
Well, we've got a couple of different samples here. And when it comes to cookies, the great debate really comes down to crispy versus chewy. So the question is, what's the science that we can learn about those things? And the patent that you mentioned is actually a great resource because it has a lot of background science that the patent has to go into to explain what they were doing.
How were the other companies able to figure out the secret of that?
Well, when I dug into the history of this one, one of the companies, I think, flew a plane overhead. Another company had somebody pretend to be like a guest visitor looking at stuff. It was old gumshoe detective work back then. Now, of course, when the patent finally came out, it's published. And that's the great thing about patents for anybody who's curious at home, is that you can go online and search through the literature and actually come up with great background explanations for everything from, you know, sucrose versus fructose and how that changes chewy versus crispy cookies.
So what was the secret in this patent?
Well, the secret in their patent was that instead of making a standard cookie dough that was just uniform, they actually made two different doughs. And they basically put one dough in the middle and then had the second dough surrounding it. So when it comes to doughs, the amount of complex sugars, this is sucrose, standard table sugar, as compared to the amount of simple sugars, fructose or glucose, will change the amount of moisture that the cookies hold onto during baking. So these two doughs just had different ratios of those sugars.
So that was a secret. You make the cookie with two different doughs.
Two different doughs in their case.
And what does that mean as it bakes? So you get one is chewy, one is crispy?
One is chewy, one is crispy. Now, there's a couple of different things that actually determine what's chewy and what's crispy. The sugar ratio and the type of sugar certainly does it. The amount of butter, gluten, you know, kind of the different ingredients in there will definitely do it. Mm-hmm. But in their case, you know, if you actually look at even modern packaged cookies, and I brought two in here so we can actually just look at them.
I'm looking.
You know, we've got chewy and we've got crispy. And if you look at the back of these, the actual ingredients listed are different. The chewy ones actually list having molasses, which has some of the simpler sugars, and cornstarch, which when it heats up, gelatinizes and holds into water. So if you take one of these chewy cookies, and I'm going to do this in front of the mic, and maybe we can hear what the soft cookie breaking sounds like.
Very gentle.
Barely anything. Whereas, you know, a crispy cookie does this.
Oh, nice snap.
And hopefully that kind of came through. But it's so distinct. Right. Now, if they take those two different doughs and formulate them, you know, as we were talking about, extruded kind of like a refrigerator cookie. You know, these are holiday cookies you see all the time, you know, maybe a red center and kind of a white outside. You know, it's kind of more decorative. They're doing the same thing, but instead of for visual differences, they were doing it for textural differences.
Yeah, two different doughs. And is it true that a group of researchers at UC Davis actually took an MRI of cookies?
I love this one. Some researchers managed to build a non-magnetic oven that they could actually put into their MR machine. You would think this would not be doable, but somebody figured out, and they actually watched what happens to cookies as they bake. And fresh-baked cookies are actually crispier around the edge, which kind of intuitively makes sense because the heat of the cookie of the oven is going to heat up the outer dough first. It's going to get hotter first, and the water is going to dry off. And that means as you pull it out of the oven, and for about the first day, the outer edge is crispier, and the middle's got that more chewy side. And that's what these researchers originally were trying to do, is make something that would be shelf-stable that had the hallmarks of a fresh-baked cookie, just like Mom used to make.
Right. Our number, 844-724-8255, if you have a cookie question, a cookie chemistry, can get another C in there, cookie chemistry question, 844-724-8255. If you're in a cookie quandary, 844-SCI-TALK is our number. Now, I understand that you've been doing a lot of experimenting, in the kitchen this week.
I have.
You've come up with something unique. You have developed a special recipe?
I have come up with my version of what I jokingly call the patent-violating cookie recipe. Fortunately, you know, the patent has since expired, so hopefully there won't be any, you know, lawsuit settlements here. And I think we
call his lawyer, not ours.
I wrote up the recipe last night in the fit of making tons of cookies. I've had so many cookies this week that I'm beginning to feel a bit like a beached whale about to explode. It's just nonstop cookies.
Pillsbury Doughboy.
Yeah.
Sorry, I couldn't resist.
No, it's okay. So, you know, there's a bunch of different things in the cookies that kind of become interesting to think about. You know, when it comes to a cookie going into the oven, it heats up. The outer edge dries out first, and the middle kind of becomes gooey, and then eventually sets. Over the course of a day, when you pull it out, it actually kind of, the moisture equalizes back out. And so this actually means your cookies will be more uniform a day after baking them. So if you like chewy cookies, you actually might like them a day out instead of day of.
It's like second day turkey or something. It always tastes better or leftovers.
Well, food is amazingly complicated. And as, you know, we kind of think, oh, this thing is just sitting here and nothing's happening.
Right.
But that's not the case at all. Whether the dough's resting before or after, you know, it's constantly undergoing change.
Let's go to Becky in Solon, Ohio. Hi, welcome to Science Friday.
Hi, I have a cookie science question that's always bothered me. We do gingerbread cutout cookies every year, and when we're working with the dough gets darker the longer we work with it, which always seems counterintuitive to me because we're adding white flour. Does anybody know why that happens?
The dough gets darker. My first quick guess would be that the moisture from the molasses is actually causing the starches in the flour to hydrate and change some properties around them that's going to change essentially the molecular size and thus make it pure, you know, change in its color and appearance. But that's only a hypothesis. The way I would try to answer this would actually be going to either two sites. Books.google.com is surprisingly good, and the second is actually scholar.google.com. Both of these can let you actually dig into the literature in pretty deep ways.
Thank you, Becky. Thanks for that phone call. I'm in the middle of eating one of your your patent number. You even got the patent number on the cookie.
Oh, it's great.
Here.
You should go Google patent 4455333. I mean, that background on it is fascinating.
Yeah, we have actually the patent on our website if you want to see the patent. And it's really got the technical language in it. It's
technical, and you know, it's actually surprisingly accessible because it's lawyers that are writing it, and they want to make sure that if this patent goes to case, which this one did, that there's no argument that they knew their stuff.
Let's move on to cookies. You actually recommended baking cookies with bread flour. Why is that?
Well, this is if you're trying to make something that's chewier. Normally, you would use an all-purpose, or even if you want something crispier, more of a cake flour. But in the case of something that's chewier, the gluten levels in the dough will actually hold on to a little more moisture. Now, again, it's that challenge of holding water as the cookie bakes. You can't just add more water in. You actually have to formulate the dough so that it holds on to more water. So some more gluten can potentially do that. The simpler sugars, the fructose and glucose, will do that. There's actually another clever patent that actually uses a gel. They take agar or guar gum, and they basically chop it up, blend it up, and toss it into the dough to hold on to moisture. So the name of the game is to hold enough water in that cookie dough to keep the It's about a 6% water level. You need at least about 6% in the final cooked product for it to be soft and chewy.
Does it matter then that whether you use butter or other kinds of shortening in it for the water? Because butter has water in it, doesn't
butter
it?
Butter has water in it. And this is one of those, you know, melt the butter versus keep the butter not melted. You know, butter is about 15 to 17% water, and it's an emulsion. So the fat actually... the butter fat is actually holding on to that water. If you melt it, then the water becomes available to the flour as you mix, increasing the amount of gluten that's there. But it's,
So it's really depends on very carefully on what those ingredients are.
Yeah.
You don't substitute sugar for molasses or
something
else. No,
that will make a huge difference.
You have
difference.
To really be careful with that.
Yeah,
the recipe.
And it comes down to really the actual macro properties of the ingredients. So, you know, other sucrose-based sugars, maple syrup actually is mostly sucrose. It's got some water, so you'd have to cancel it out. On the glucose and fructose side, standard corn syrup that you get at the grocery store is actually essentially 100% glucose in terms of the sugar. So you could do a substitution there.
Okay, I'm in the middle of this cookie. I don't even want to go to the phones. We're going to go to the phones. Hi, welcome to Science Friday. Go ahead.
Am I on the air?
You are on the air.
Well, it's so exciting to be on the air. Okay, I have a question about how come whenever I try to make the big restaurant-style cookies, it turns into a big undercooked mess or a burnt.
Big,
really flat thing.
Big undercooked mass or burn flat thing. Well, first we should probably say the big restaurant style cookies are actually really three different types of dough.
Really?
Not two.
There's secrets out there.
Secret. I am now revealing it. If you think about that cookie being kind of a bullseye target, the middle of it's actually really a gooey dough where the starch hasn't actually fully set. It's not even really cooked. Then there's that second ring around that where you're essentially at the chewy stage where there's enough moisture still present. It's the starches are set, but it hasn't actually dried out enough. And then there's the outer third of or so of it where it's actually gotten completely dry. Well, not completely, but low enough that it's actually crispy and caramelized and has all those kind of rich things. So there's a couple things that have been going on. You know, you said one there that, is basically a big mess and it was blackened. You know, in that case, you want to check your flour levels. Probably the biggest thing to do in baking is to really weigh your ingredients, and I cannot stress this enough. You know, maybe next time I'll bring in a container of flour and we can do the great weigh-off, because one cup of flour can vary as much as 20 or 30%.
Wow.
And that's a huge difference, especially when you're talking about, you know, little 6% versus 8% versus 4% differences. So measure the flour. Make sure your oven's actually calibrated. And, you know, start with those two things.
All right. Thanks for calling. Our number, if you'd like to talk cookies, 844-724-8255. Talking with Jeff Potter, who is author of Cooking for Geeks, Real Science, Great Hacks, and Good Food, kitchen classic now, on Science Friday from PRI, Public Radio International. Lots of people love to talk cookies.
Oh, yeah.
Is there any science about why milk goes so well with cookies?
You know, I haven't looked into that one yet. You know, milk's got lactose in it, so it's got some amount of sugar there, and that probably complements well. If you're like me and you like your cookies crispy, well, I like any cookie that's in front of me. But if you like your cookies slightly crispy, you know, the idea of dunking it into something's probably good.
Let's go to Meredith in Tallahassee. Hi, Meredith.
Hi, Ira. Thank you so much for taking my call. I absolutely love Science Friday.
Well, thank you.
Thank you so much. Hi, Jeff. My question is, I have baked several different chocolate chip cookie recipes, and each time that I bake them, the cookie turns out kind of puffy, almost more like a pancake, where it's kind of like maybe I would think too much baking soda in it, and it's puffed up too much, and I have tried different recipes. I follow the recipe exactly, and I have the same result. So I'm just very confused as to what I'm doing wrong, and I feel like people bake cookies all the time with no problems, and I just can't get the cookie right.
What kind of flour are you using, and how are you measuring it out?
Well, I heard what you had said about weighing. I definitely have not been weighing, but I'm pretty careful to kind of chop the top of my all-purpose flour into my measuring cup, and I try to level it off, but I have not been using any kind of weighing system. I just kind of measure by cup.
I'm going to guess if they're consistently coming out kind of cakey and more together, that it's something to do with the amount of flour or the way that you're mixing that flour together into the dough. So
okay, I definitely feel like, because I do a lot of cooking and baking, that it would have something to do with the flour, but I've tried reducing the flour ever so slightly just because they taste too, cakey. They're very puffy, and I just keep getting them wrong.
And you're using standard unsalted butter?
No, I've been using salted butter.
Salted butter. That's not likely to make a difference here. Just as a side note, generally, unsalted butter and then adding the salt and lets you control the amount of salt. Salted butter can vary from 1.5 to 3% salt. But the reason I ask about the butter is that depending upon how you're actually creaming your butter and your sugar together and then adding your flour in, you're going to get differences in the way that the flour incorporates into the rest of the dough.
Okay, we got to move on. Good luck to you. Thank you so much. Good luck.
Good luck.
Hope Martha Stewart's listening. one last question. People think they're on a diet. They want to cut back the sugar in their cookie recipe. Can I just half the sugar?
No, you can't do that because the sugar is not just there for flavor. It's there for structure. Sugar actually interferes just like fat does with gluten formation. So if you just reduce the amount of sugar, it's not going to work because it's there for the physical properties of not just the physiological taste properties of it. You know, we use sugar a lot just to sweeten things up, but in this case, it's also providing body and mass to your cookie.
So you're saying have a good time on the
have
holiday,
a good
right?
time. You're, you know, you're don't make making, them every day. Yeah. That's been my problem this week. But have a good time with them.
Yeah, I mean one day eating a couple of cookies. Or a couple of dozen cookies in your case. I was going to say it doesn't make a difference, but you don't look any worse for wear. How many cookies do you make?
I don't normally. I'm actually a pretty healthy eater most of the time. This is a holiday treat. It's this nice thing to make for family and friends. I'm going to go to the gym and go for a swim because I have been sitting around.
As long as you leave these cookies behind, I'm taking them home.
They're yours. You can have them. I'll make you more. I got more at home.
All right, Jeff. Thanks a lot.
Thanks
Happy
for
holiday
having me.
To you.
You too.
Jeff Potter, author of Cooking for Geeks, Real Science, Great Hacks, and Good Food.